Good morning. Let's begin. So today's daf is Pehei. We are picking up Emeretz Hashem on Pei Dalet Amud Beis Gufa. So right by the two dots, about 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, 14, 16, 18 lines up from the bottom. So the Gemara begins with actually a very interesting discussion. Gufa, Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav, Lo Hustru, Ksheros, Li Nasei L'Psulin. So Rav Yehuda said in Marav that Ksheros, women who are genealogically fit, there is no problem for them to go out and marry a psulim, a apostle. The Rabbi said, now what does this mean? Obviously, you can't refer to every single situation of where there's a psul, but rather, let's say there are certain types of genealogical issues where it poses a problem for a man to marry a particular woman, but yet, again, for the woman, it does not pose any problem for her to marry him. So what does this mean? Le misayele. Let's say that our Mishnah supports this. Because what did the Mishnah say? Chalal shenasa kshera. The Mishnah spoke about a case of a chalal who married a kshera. Now again, and the Mishnah said that's an example of a situation where the marriage is permissible. Now what's the kshera? My kshera, bless you. What's the kshera? Kshera the kahuna. Is the kshera that we're talking about not a kshera lakuna? In other words, the Mishnah is talking about a case of a chalal who married a woman who has proper yichus from a Kohanic family. So you see from here that although she is quote-unquote a kohenes, she is permitted to go ahead and marry a chalal, to which the Gemara says, lo, Yisraelis. No, we're talking about she's a Yisraelis, not a kohenes. Umay kshera. So what does kshera mean? Kshera lakal. It means that she's permitted to marry into the General Assembly of the Jewish people. The Gemara says, 1 second, Yihachi, yesh lo ach kosher. Then what about the next case in the Mishnah where it says that the chalal has a brother who's a kosher? So does that also mean nami kosher lakal? Does that also mean that the brother, when it says he's kosher to marry into the kal? Michlal, dehu pasul kal. We can infer from that then that the husband in that case is someone who is what? Who is not kosher to marry into the kal, but that's not true. Because in the case of the Mishnah, the husband is a chalal, and a chalal is permitted to marry into the kal. Ela lav kohen. Rather, it must be that what? When it says that he's kosher, means that he's a kosher kohen. Umidahu kohen, he kohenes. And the fact that kosher by the brother means kohen, it must mean that kshera by the woman means that she's a kohenes, she's from a kohenic family. And therefore, the Mishnah is teaching me that although a woman is permitted to marry someone who has a type of genealogical blemish. So meaning she's permitted to marry a chalal. To which the Gemara says, no, midi iria, hakadisa v'hakadisa. Maybe not. Maybe kshera by the woman means one thing, but kosher by the brother-in-law means something different. Massive Ravin bar Nachman, lo yichu. The Rabbi said, the Gemara over here is quoting the pasuk by the Kohen. Isha zona v'chalala lo yikachu. Excuse me, not yichu, yikachu. An isha zona and a chalala, the Kohen may not marry. The isha gerusha mi isha lo yikachu. And he may not marry a divorcee, bless you, kikadoshu leilokav, because he is sanctified for his God. So the Torah says, lo yikachu twice. Melamed, sha'isha musheres ayideh ha'ish. It teaches us that just as the Kohen may not marry certain women, so to a Kohenes may not marry certain men. Amar Rava says, kol heicha duhu musar hi musheres. So Rava essentially says like this, any situation where a Kohen can't marry a woman, a Kohenes can't marry a man, the same man. V'chol heicha duhu lo musar. But any case where a Kohen would not be prohibited to marry a particular woman, he lo mizdara. She is not prohibited either. I v'ha mehacha nafka. But do we learn this out from here? Midrav Yehuda Marav nafka. We learn out from, say, Rabbi Yehuda Marav. What did Rabbi Yehuda Marav say? Amar Rabbi Yehuda Marav, v'chin tana d'vei Rabbi Shmuel, ish o isha, ki ya'asu mikol chatosa adam. But the pasuk says, a man or a woman will go ahead and commit any of the averos. El kol chatos adam. What do we learn from there? Hishva kosuv isha le'ish, l'chol onshin shabbatorah. The Torah goes ahead and equates men and women for all prohibitions in the Torah. To which the Gemara says, imeahi, if we learn out from there, hava amina lav hashava b'kol. I would have thought that this idea that men and women are equal when it comes to prohibitions is only what? Prohibitions that apply equally to everyone. But if you have a lav that is not applicable to everyone, for example, like a chalal, like marrying a chalal, therefore what? Lo. Then perhaps that should not apply equally to men and women. Top of pehe. I vahari tumah. But when it comes to the laws of tumah and tara, well, specifically again, when it comes to the laws of tumah vis-a-vis the kahuna, the lav she'in shava bakol, and ultimately it is not shava bakol, meaning again, the laws of tumah the laws of Tumah, as they apply to Kohanim, are dafka by Kohanim and not by everyone else. The time of the cost of Rachmana b'nei Aaron v'lo b'nos Aaron. And the only reason women are excluded from that is because the Torah says that the b'nei Aaron, dabra el b'nei Aaron, and we learn from there that what? That the laws of Tumah only apply to the sons of Aaron, i.e. the male members of Aaron, and not to what? Not to b'nos Aaron, not to the female members of the Kohanic family. To which they want to halav hachi, and for this exclusion, hava amina nashim chayavos. I would have said that women are chayavos in the laws of tuma of the kuna, even though what? Even though it's not a lav hashava bakol, even though it doesn't equally apply to everyone. To which the Gemara says, my time, what's the reason for that? Lav mishum Rav Yehuda amar Rav. Is it not because of that which Rav Yehuda said in the name of Rav? Of the isho isha idea, to which the Gemara says, lo, the gamrinon milo yikachu. No, rather, it's because we learn it out ultimately again from lo yikachu, as we said before. Ikadamri, there are others who explain, or we'll say another version of the previous exchange. Kicha itzrichale. You need the kicha, you need the yikachu to teach us. Sakadait chamina ligmar mituma. Because were it not for yikachu, I would have thought that the prohibitions of kahuna do not apply upon a woman. Because after all, I would have learned it out. Ligmar mituma. I would have learned that from tuma to say that what? That just as the laws of tuma only apply to the male members of the Kohanic family, so to what? So to the maisa. The other restrictions, let's say in terms of marital restrictions, also only apply to the male members of the Kohanic family. Kamashmala, no, that they apply to the females as well. Rav Papa Rav Huna Bar Idi Yoshua, iklo lehinsivu la'asrei Rav Idi Bar Avin. So we'll say Rav Papa and Rav Huna, the son of Rav Yoshua, went to Hinsivu. Hinsivu is the name of a place, which was the city of Rav Idi Bar Avin. Bo'u minayu, and they asked the following kasha. Husru ksheros li nasi lepsun olo. And they asked the kasha, are ksheros, are women who are genealogically fit, is there a problem for them to marry pasul men? So we'll say specifically, is a kohenes permitted to marry a chalal or not? We know, for example, a kohen cannot marry a chalala. Is there a similar type of prohibition for a kohenes to marry a chalal? Olo or not? Armulu Rapap. Rapapa said, Tenisua, we learn this. Asari, this is actually very interesting. Asari yochsin alul mibavel. There are 10 genealogical groups that came up from Bavel. This is with Ezra to rebuild the second temple. Who were they? Kohanim, Leviim, Yisraelim. Okay. Chalolim. Rabosi had this whole group of Chalolim. Remember, Chalolim are the offspring of forbidden Kohanic unions. A Kohen marries a divorcee, or a Kohen marries a Chalala, or a Kohen Godel marries a widow, or a Kohen marries a Gioras. Forbidden relations produce Chalolim. So you had a group of Chalolim, Gerim, converts, Charurim. Rabbi said Charurim are emancipated Avadim Kenanim. Right, so emancipated Avadim who are also Jewish. Mamzerim, Nisinim. Rabbi said we spoke about the Nisinim. The Nisinim are the Givonim. Shtuki, remember again, so we'll say the Nisinim represent that group that converted in the times of Yoshua under fraudulent circumstances. Yoshua felt obligated to honor the covenant with them. But again, they had commitment issues with their Judaism. Shtuki, the Rebbe says Shtuki. We actually saw Shtuki earlier on in the Masechta. Shtuki is a child whose paternity is unknown. We know who his mother is. We don't know his father. It's interesting. Rashi pointed out earlier on, why do they call him a Shtuki? Because whenever he says, "Oh, daddy, daddy," his mother says, "Shh." Right, meaning that's not your father. Right, we're not sure who your father is. Right, so again, that's the Shtuki. Asufi. A Sufi is someone who, again, we don't know who either of the parents are. So they're called an Asufi because generally children were sometimes left in the marketplace. Somebody took them in. They were collected. Asufi means collected. They were collected from the shuk. We have absolutely no idea who their parents are. So I'll say, obviously, you understand that Shtuki and Asufi children pose incredible genealogical issues because we're not sure. We're not sure, again, who their parents are. We're not sure who their parents are. And I will say, obviously, that poses a problem for what? It poses a problem. Forget about if they're a Kohen or a Levi. That's the least of it. It poses a problem vis-a-vis marriage, right? Because ultimately, again, the concern is what if I'm an Asufi, which is I don't know who my parents are, and somebody wants to introduce me to a very nice young lady to go ahead and get married, right? So what's the problem? What's the problem? For all I know, I might be related to her, right? For all I know, we might have the same father. For all I know, we might have the same mother. So because we don't know, again, how, so also you should just know this comes up, you should know, interestingly enough, very often in the realm of adoption. So, you know, there's an interesting discussion among the poskim as to whether or not it is better to adopt a Jewish child or a non-Jewish child. And interestingly enough, many poskim come down and say it is much better if one is going to adopt non-Jewish children. Why? Because you don't run into any yichus issues. Because we know we have to do a geros, you have to do a conversion for the children. And there's absolutely, we'll actually get into this. It's a discussion of what's called Shema Yisa Ach Achoso, out of a concern that a person may end up marrying his sister, so to speak. That if we don't know, if we know the child is Jewish, but we don't know the paternity of the child, it can cause incredible halachic issues. So I'm simplifying a much more complicated discussion, but it's just interesting to point out. In any event, see, you had Asufim. We'll actually get into that sugya later on. Kohanim, Levi, so the Gemara says, so we'll say these are the 10 different groups, genealogical groups that came up with Ezra. Kohanim, Leviim, Yisraelim, Mutarim, Lavo, Zebozem. So Kohanim, Leviim, Yisraelim, they are permitted to marry within those three classes. So class, I don't like using the word classes, but I don't know another word for it. Groups, what? Classes. Oh, the Kohanim always like the word classes. Yes, I understand. All right, yes, the classes, right? So the Kohanim, Levim, Yisraelim are permitted to marry into each other. So what happens? Lavo zeh bazeh. Levim, Yisraelim, chalalim. Gerim, charurim, mutarim, lavo zeh bazeh. Similarly what? Similarly again, Levim, Yisraelim, chalalim, gerim, and charurim, emancipated servants, they are all permitted to marry into each other. Okay, geire charure mamzere nesini shtuki vasufi murtarn lavo zebazeh. Similarly, converts, emancipated slaves, who are now Jews, mamzerim, nesinim, shtukim, asufim, are all permitted, it's not working today, are all permitted to go ahead and marry into each other. Once again, we'll get into this, the fact that the shtuki and then a sufi can marry a mamzer. So we'll actually discuss that later on. The iluk, now the Gemara points out, what's missing from this case? The ilu, kohanos l'chala lokatan, l'chala lokatani. What's missing from here? The Gemara doesn't mention that a kohenes is permitted to marry a chalal. Therefore, we could infer from that, that's what? That she is not permitted to do so. To which the Gemara says, no. Amar li Rav Huna bar Rav Yoshua. No, I'll tell you why that case is not included. Kol heicha dehani naspi mehani, behani naspi mehani katani. Any case where the man can marry a woman, and the woman can marry a man, we include that case. However, Kohen, Kevan di ilu ba'ila misav chalala asirale lo katani. So basically, here's the problem. The Gemara says the only cases are mentioned in this price over here are cases where the man can marry the woman and the woman can marry the man. The reason why this price does not mention the case of a kohenes marrying a chalal is why? Because the converse is not true. A Kohen can't marry a chalala. So because a Kohen can't marry a chalala, we don't mention that case at all. But lemaisa, we still passing that what? That a Kohenes is in fact permitted to marry a chalal. Also, look at Rav Yehudi bar Avin. They came up for Rav Yehudi bar Avin. Amar luhu, Rav Yehudi bar Avin said, Dardiki, children. He was referring to his Talmid, my children. Hachi, Amar Rav Yehudi bar Av, lo husru ksheros li nasi lipsulin. So Rav Yehudi is the name of Rav, that ksheros. So a Kohenes is not prohibited to marry anyone who is possible. Now, both say, this, as you can imagine, this actually has halach lemaisa ramifications. Let's say you have a girl who's a bas kohen, and she's introduced to a very nice halal. So, right, there are some wonderful halalim out there. Right, so is she permitted to go out and marry this halal? So listen to what the Rambam says. So this is the Rambam in Isurei Biyah, Perek Yotes Halacha Aleph. So the Rambam writes, Kohen Zohar Shu Asr Lisa Zona V'Halala, Asr B'Giyoros M'Shukhra Shi Zona K'moshu V'Yana. So we'll say, the Rambam over here is discussing who a Kohen is not permitted to marry. So if a male Kohen is not permitted to marry a Zona, or a Chalala, or a convert, or a M'Shukhra, that's fine. Aval, Kohenes Muteres Lihinase L'Chalal, Uleger, Ulam Shukra, but Rabbi say a girl from a Kohanic family is permitted to marry a chalal, is permitted to marry a convert, is permitted to marry an emancipated slave who's now Jewish. Why? Shelo husuru kesheros li nasi lepsulin. Because female members of Kohanic families do not have the same marital restrictions as their male relatives. Shene emar b'nei Aaron v'lo b'nos Aaron. Because when the Torah phrases the prohibitions of who you can marry, the Torah phrases it as referring to b'nei Aaron and not b'nos. So we'll say this is very lemaisa, very lemaisa. So in a Kohanic family, and this is contemporarily relevant, you have a Kohanic family with boys and girls, the boys will absolutely be limited as to who they are permitted to marry, but no such restriction applies to the girls. So the girls could go ahead and marry Gerim, they can marry Avadim Mishukhrarim, they can marry Chalolim, and absolutely no problem. That's, and the Rosa, and that is Halacha Lamaisa. So if you're going and you have daughters, important to know. All kidding aside, really important to know. So the Gemara says the following. Bo'u minei, next. Shneos midi v'sofrim. So remember what I say, the Mishnah said that if you enter into a prohibited marriage, prohibited midoraisa, so the woman has a ksuva still from that marriage, but if you marry any of the shneos, the secondary arrives, i.e. rabbinically prohibited people, then lamaisa what? The woman has no ksuva and none of the financial benefits of marriage. Bo'ominei b'nei b'ri mirav sheshes. Shnia labal, bless you, v'lo shnia liyavam, yesh la ksuva miyav malavam. So it's a very interesting case. Let's say a man is married to a woman who's a shnia to him. She's rabbinically prohibited to him, to the husband. But then he dies, no children. She is not rabbinically prohibited to the yavam. She's not rabbinically prohibited to the yavam. So the question is, we'll say the following. Now, the Mishnah Paskin, that if a man marries a woman who's a shnia to him, she does not have a ksuva from him. But now she's not a shnia from the yavam. So does she get a ksuva from the yavam or not? So on one end, we could say, Kevan to Amar Mar, ksuvas al nechse baila rishon, lesla. So on one end, we could say, well, look, we know that the way that Yibam works is that even when she does Yibam, whom does her ksuva come from? The ksuva comes from husband number one. So therefore, if there's no ksuva from husband number one, there is no ksuva from the Yavam. O Dilma, Kevan di ilu les la me rishon takin le rabana misheni isla. On the other hand, we also learned that what? That if for some reason husband number one, i.e. the dead husband, was impoverished, had nothing to his name, then what? Husband number two, i.e. the yavam, is obligated to go ahead and provide her with a ksuva. To which the answer, so we learn this, ksuva san nichsei by la harishon. We learned in the Mishnah that the ksuva of a yavama comes from the property of her now deceased husband. Vim haisa shnia lebal, afilu miyavam einla. But if she was a shnia to the husband, meaning it was an illegal marriage, then what? She does not even have a ksuva from the yavam. Michlal di ika di islim yavam, which seems to indicate that what? That lamaisa again, that if she did have, they would be from the yavam. To which the Gemara says, "Chisur Master Valchikatani." No, there's a piece missing, and here's how you have to read this statement: "Ksuva sa'an nichsei by laharishon. Her ksuva, the ksuva of a yavama, comes from the property of the first husband. V'i lesla mirishon. But if she does not have a ksuva from husband number one, then what? Takino la mishin. It is a normal case. If let's say again, husband number one was dirt poor, he had nothing, so she didn't even have a ksuva, then what? Then the yavam is obligated to provide her with a ksuva. We actually learned that already. However, vim haisa shnia lebal. But if she was a shnia to husband number one, right, and therefore again she had no ksuva from him, then afilu miyavam ein la. So Rabbi say if she was a shnia to the baal, to the husband number one, and therefore again, even if he, and therefore she had no ksuva, whether what Rabbi say, whether he had the money or he didn't have the money, then in that case, then what? She certainly has no ksuva from the yavam as well, and that is indeed halacha lamaisa. So in a case of where, which Rabbi say, if you think about it, is intuitively logical, because essentially what we're saying is, if she did not have a ksuva in marriage number one because of the illegality of that union, then certainly what? That illegality still spreads, even though the Yavam might be able to do Yibam with her, but everyone agrees that the Yibam relationship is an extension of the first marriage. So if she did not have a ksuva in marriage number one because of the illegality of the union, so therefore again, husband number two, i.e. the Yavam, will not be obligated to go ahead and give her a ksuva as well. Boi mine Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Yochanan. So Rabbi Elazar has the following kach, Rabbi Yochanan. Amana le Kohen Gadol. What if you have the following case? An Amana marries a Kohen Gadol, or Grusha v'chalutza le Kohen Hedyot, or a Grusha and Chalutza to a Kohen Hedyot. Now, both say, remember, all of these are legal unions, right? A Kohen Gadol can't marry an Amana, a Kohen Hedyot can't marry a Grusha v'chalutza. So here's the Shaila. Yesh la mezonos or eilan mezonos. Do they get mezonos during the marriage or not? So both say, we know they don't get a ksuva. Excuse me, I take that back. They do get a ksuva. in these cases. But the question is, do they get mizonos or not? Right? Do they get material support? Right? Mizonos literally means food, so day-to-day support from the husband or not. So the Gemara says, hey, chidami, what's the case? Ile madiyasvo to say, so if you say they're literally living together, of course not. Ba'amod v'hotzei kai, mizonos is say, but we'll say, remember, we are trying to encourage this couple to get divorced. So if you give her mizonos, then what? Then what? There's no reason to get divorced. So of course, we're not going to give her mizonos in that kind of case, because if she's not being supported, so we'll say, see, think about this. He says, we're going to see, part of the reason we guarantee the ksuva in a case of a biblically prohibited marriage is, think about this for just a moment. If she's entitled to ksuva, but she's not entitled to mizonos, then it's in her best interest to what? Cash out from the marriage, right? Quite literally, because she's not getting support from the estate, which means she's on her own financially anyway. So again, but she has this lump sum payout that is waiting for her as soon as she exits the marriage. So to give her the ksuva, deprive her of mizonos, is the greatest, you incentivize divorce. See, if they're living together, it's clear that what? It's clear that Lamaisa, you're not going to go ahead and give her mizonos. So what's the case? The case is rather, what's the case? The case is where, let's say, the Kohen Gadol husband went overseas. He's married to the Salmana, illegal marriage. He went overseas. And what? She is borrowing in order to support herself. So now what's the Shaila? The Shaila is, who is going to be obligated to pay back these debts? If there's a chiyuv of mizonos, so let's say stama case. So what happens? A man goes ahead and is married, and he goes away on a business trip, and his wife says, you know, while you were gone, I had to take care of my mizonos. The husband normally does the cooking. Let's say my husband does the cooking, so he's away. She says, you know, mamish, I'm not good in the kitchen, so I went out. You know, I borrowed $500 from the neighbor that was able to support me with the takeout while I was gone. Husband comes back. Who's obligated to pay that bill? So of course, it's a no-brainer. Who's obligated to pay every bill, right? Who's obligated to pay that bill? So of course, again, from a halachic perspective, the husband. Why? Because he has a chiyuv mizonos for her, and therefore, if she borrows in order to go ahead and take care of her mizonos, he's on the hook for that. So the shaila is over here. Illegal marriage, Kohen Gadol married to an almana. He went overseas. She borrowed money to support herself. Who is obligated to pay back that debt? On one hand, the Gemara says, "My mizoni tonight ksuva ninu." On one hand, we could say mizonos is a function of the ksuva, meaning it's one of the rights, it's one of the entitlements in the ksuva. Midi is like ksuva islenai mizoni. If she has a ksuva, which Rabbo says she does, therefore what? She also has mizonos. On the other hand, O Dilma, ksuva dila mishkal umethik isle, mizona dilma ta'akiv gabe lesle. On the other hand, maybe we say no. The only thing she is entitled to is what Rabbo say, is the payout of the ksuva. But the other tnai ksuva she's not entitled to, because again, Rabbo say, remember, we want this marriage to end. If you give her the other ksuva entitlements, then what? That could induce her to stay. Right, that could go and encourage her to stay. Therefore, lemaisa again, perhaps she doesn't have the tnai ksuva, to which the Gemara says, amrle lesla, she does not have entitlements to mizonos. And therefore, Rabbo say again, so she doesn't have entitlements to mizonos, obviously, when they're living together. And in the case where the husband had to go overseas and she borrowed money to go out and feed herself, who is responsible to satisfy those debts? The woman herself. Her husband is not. She has no mizonos. So again, interestingly enough, everyone's going to agree she's entitled to a ksuva, but she does not get mizonos from such a union. I v'hatanya yeshla, but Rabbi, we have a braisa that says that she's entitled to mizonos. Ki tanya hahi la'achar misa. All right, I'll tell you where she does get mizonos. Let's say Kohen Gadol is married to an almana, illegal marriage, and he dies. So then he dies before he ever divorced her. Oh, in that case, now she's an almana. Now when she's an almana, what Rabbi says, so the estate is obligated to support her, and obligated to give her mizonos. Obviously, she only gets an amana, only gets mizonos until when? Until she cashes out her ksuva. Once she cashes out her ksuva, so any mizonos obligations end. So then when the Braisa says that she's entitled to mizonos, that is true after the husband dies. So the Gemara says, Ista Amar, others explain, Amrle Tanya Yeshla. Others explain this exchange the following. That he said to him, we have a brayso that says that she does have mazonos. How could that be that she has mazonos? We're trying to encourage him to divorce her. We're trying to encourage her to leave the marriage. If you give her mazonos, you take away the incentive for her to leave the marriage. But what do we do with the fact that it does say she has mazonos? That's referring ultimately again to after the husband dies. So we'll say again, therefore, Allah Lamaisa, what the Gemara teaches us is like this. If a Kohen Gadol marries an Almana, she does have a ksuba, but what? She does not have Tanoi ksuba. Now we'll say, by the way, it's not only mizonos. For example, one of the obligations a husband has is to ransom his wife. Right? Again, in a situation like this, of this illegal marriage, she would not be obligated to ransom her. Right? Honey, I love you. Right? But if you're taken captive, you're on your own. Right? So again, so that's, first of all, that should be a marriage ender right there. Right? And again, that's the point. It's supposed to be a marriage ender. The idea is over here, we are incentivizing divorce by making the woman recognize that, look, at the end of the day, you are not going to get anything financially. Look, if she loves this guy to pieces and she doesn't care about the money, that's fine. But at the end of the day, again, as she realizes she's not getting any material support from this relationship, and the only material struggle she will get is in the form of a ksuva that she only gets upon divorce, then lemaisa, again, it incentivizes divorce. So halach lemaisa, she gets no mazonos in such a situation. The only situation where she would get mazonos in such a union is when, if he died. If he died, then ein achinami, the estate would be obligated. The estate would be obligated to provide her with mazonos, but while they're both alive, no obligation of mazonos. Tanya, I'm sorry, the Gemara says weiter. Remember, the Braisa teaches the following. If a Kohen Gadol marries an Almana, or a regular Kohen marries a Grusha V'chalutza, illegal marriages, what is that halacha? Yesh la ksuva, she gets her ksuva. Peros, mizonos, ublos, v'hi psula, vlada psula. So, according to this Braisa, what are we saying over here? According to this brisa, she not only gets her ksuva, but she also gets peros. So we'll say we spoke about this, about the peros, that halacha lemaisa, she has the right to go ahead and she has the right to get reimbursed from any of the peros, the actual physical usage that he got of her property over the duration of marriage. Mizonos, so mizonos literally means support. Belos, so we'll say belos means that if let's say there was property that she brought in that he's using, but that property is still in existence, she could demand that property back. However, v'hi psula, but of course she becomes a chalala. Uvlada pasul, and of course her children become chalolim as well. V'kofin osa lahotzi, and we force the husband to divorce her. Next case, shnios midivrei sofrim. I will say, what happens if a man marries a woman who is rabbinically prohibited to him? She is a shnia. What's that locha? Ein lo ksuva. She has no ksuva. Lo peros, lo mazonos, v'lo belos. And she doesn't get peros, she doesn't get mazonos, she doesn't get belos. V'hi kshera, she is kshera, meaning again, this marriage doesn't have a negative impact on her, meaning she is still a kshera. However, uvlada kasher, and her offspring ultimately, again, are still ksherim as well. V'kofin oso lahotzi, and we force the husband to go ahead and divorce her. Now, we'll say, what the Gemara just did is lined up these two concepts right next to one another, and the truth is, it seems totally illogical. So if you are in a biblically prohibited relationship, then what? You have to get divorced, but the woman gets every single financial entitlement. Every single financial entitlement. However, again, if you are in a rabbinically prohibited marriage, then what? There is absolutely no financial entitlement. She doesn't have ksuva, mizonos, belos, peros, nothing. So Amr Shimon Elazar said, Mipnei ma amru amar lekohen gadol yesh la ksuva. So I'll say, what's the pshat over here? Why is it that if a man is in a biblically prohibited marriage, Kohen Gadol marries an Almana, that she has a ksuva? Why is that? Rabbi Shimon says, I'll tell you why. Mipnei shehu pasul v'hi psula. Because in this marriage, both he is pasul and she's psula. Remember again, he's pasul because as long as he's married to her, he can't do any kind of avoda. He can't practice as a kohen. And she, of course, is psula because, again, bia with the kohen gadol makes her a chalala. V'chomakom shehu pasul v'hi psula. And in any situation where, again, he is pasul and she is pasul, amud beis, kansu osa ksuva. The rabbis put a penalty and made him pay the ksuva. Now we'll define this in just a moment. Look at Rashi. Actually, let's look at it now. So Rashi says, "Kansu osa ksuva kolomar lo kansua mishar kol nashim v'hai de kansua rabbanon." Actually, not yet. Let's actually finish the Gemara first. Umipnei ma amru shnios min divrei sovrim ein lo ksuva. And why is it that if a man is married to a sheni, that who's only rabbinically prohibited, they say that she doesn't have a ksuva, mipnei shehi kasher, v'hu kvihi kshera, because remember, in this case, Rabbi says she still remains kasher, he still remains kasher, their offspring is kasher, v'chomakum shu kasher v'kshera, kansu osa ksuv ksuva. And therefore, again, in any case where he is kasher and she is kasher, ultimately, again, the rabbis penalized him by making him pay the ksuva. Rabbi says, so what's the pshat over here? Essentially, what Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar is saying, is that we have to create a situation where lemaisa, we're going to force the hand to create divorce. So in case number one, where Kohen Gadol is married to an almana, so Rabbi say, what's the impact of that case? The impact of that case is felt on both the Kohen and the woman. So he's going to divorce her. Why is he going to divorce her? Because lemaisa, again, he's compromised himself. So at some point in time, and Rabbi will say, it's not just compromised in terms of the avoda. There's a financial issue here also. What's the financial issue? He can't eat truma, he can't eat kachin. That's a huge financial loss. So love is all wonderful. But at the end of the day, when love is going to continuously cost you in a significant way, Chazal were quite confident that this guy, he's going to divorce her. Right? Therefore, what? There was no need to deprive her of the ksuva in that case, because lemaisa, again, he is going to feel the heat to divorce her. So you might as well go ahead and penalize him additionally by making him pay the ksuva. But in the case of the shnios, remember again, what happens in the case of where a man marries a woman who is rabbinically prohibited to him? What happens to him in that case? Nothing. What happens to her in that case? Nothing. What happens to the kids in that case? Nothing. You see the pattern over here. So the problem is what? How do you push them to get divorced? The Gemara says, I'll tell you how. Tell her she doesn't get a ksuva. Because they both say, what's going to happen? If she doesn't get a ksuva, which means she has absolutely no financial benefit. Now, it's not when she doesn't get a ksuva, that means also what? She gets no mazonos, no peros, no belows, nothing. She's not financially cared for in this relationship. What's going to happen? Again, as you said before, love is wonderful. But if she is not supported in this marriage, then what is going to happen? She is going to leave. So essentially, Shimon Elazar says that what looks like incongruity in the two cases is it is, but that's because in each case we're trying to encourage divorce. We're trying to force the couple to get divorced by applying financial pressure, and financial pressure looks differently in each of those cases. So again, in the case of biblical prohibition, husband's ultimately going to have to leave this marriage because the heat is going to be on him and he is financially compromised. Therefore, there's no need to take away the ksuva. The ksuva is another patch to him for making him get into this relationship. But in rabbinically prohibited marriages, where again, there's no incentive for them to end the marriage because he's fine, she's fine, kids are fine. The only way to force the hands of the couple to get married is take away all financial benefits from her. She will leave this marriage.
Wouldn't that be more incentive if they gave her a ksuva in the second case? So no mazonos, nothing, but you get a cash out.
Think about it. This is even better. Give her nothing. Because if you give her nothing, mama, she has absolutely no... Because again, she says to herself, you know what? I'll tell you why. If she has a ksuva, she can say, you know what? My ksuva is property. Real estate market is great. Why should I cash out now? Let me sit tight over here. Real estate, my ksuva is worth $1 million now. Let me sit it out for another 10 years. It'll be worth $5 million. So you, by depriving her of any financial abilities, you incentivize her getting out of this marriage. Right, but lemaisa, if she wants out, he'll let her out. He'll let her out. 9 out of 10 cases are like that. So the Gemara, there's always the 10th case. That is absolutely true. So the Gemara says the following. You were supposed to say, that's from Shimon Elazar. So Rabbi Shimon Elazar says, Rebbe says, no, I'll tell you a different approach. Halalu divrei Torah, v'divrei Torah in tzrichin chizuk. Rebbe takes a different approach. Rebbe says, here's the fundamental difference. The biblical prohibitions, and there, you don't have to impose any other penalties for people ultimately to come around and abide by biblical law. Meaning, even if this couple made a mistake, We are confident that they will reverse the mistake by divorcing without any other pressure. Rabbinic law, however, is always treated more lightly and more leniently. We'll say this is not, it was true in the times of the Gemara. It's true now. People treat rabbinical law a little bit more leniently, and therefore rabbinic law ultimately often needs more teeth in order for it to be enforced. Davar achar, another possibility. Zehu margila, v'zohi margila. So this is interesting. We'll say a third possibility is what? Is that in one case, Zehu margila, ultimately he entices her, Vizuhi margila so, and she entices him. Well, so what's the pshat? Look at Rashi. Zohi margila, amana lekoin gadol, grusha v'chalutz lekoin hedyot, hu margila umasisa linaselo. Rabbi said, in the case of where a kohen gadol marries an amana, so it's the kohen gadol who will appease her to marry him. Why? What's the pshat? Because Rabbi said, remember, she, if she thinks about this, it's not a good idea for her. Why is it not a good idea for her? Because she becomes a halala. And that status remains with her forever. And her children are halalim. A status remains in there forever. What's the impact on the Kohen Gadol if he marries this woman? Now, again, remember, while they're married, he is on the, you know, he's on the suspension list. But Lamais, as soon as he divorces her, what happens? He's back in business, right? So therefore, Lemaisa. So therefore, the Davar Acher says over here, this third opinion says that in the case where he is going to kind of appease her to marry, the penalty is on him, i.e. he has to pay the ksuva. But in the case where she would have to appease him to get married, the penalty is on her. Look at the finish that Rashi. Rashi says, Vizu shnia techeven delo ihi mifsala velav zara mifsale velo mifsada midi bibiyaso hi margilaso sha'isha rotzi linasi yosem in the ish. Rabbi says, in the case of the shnia, then what? She's going to be the one who appeases him. Because Rabbi says, remember, there's no downside to this marriage. He's not usher. She's not usher. The kids are not usher. In a general case, Rabbi says, we assume that who is the one who pushes the envelope on marriage? Right? When the couple's together, who is the one who's nudging about that, not nudging, chas v'shalom. Who's the one who's constantly bringing up productive discussions about getting married, right? It's the woman, right? Because again, remember, we'll actually see this in Kiddushin, that for a woman, marriage is much more important than a man, right? The woman needs that security of marriage much more than the man does. So therefore, according to this third approach, it's very interesting. So according to this third approach, the penalty is levied at the one that we assume was the initiator of the relationship. So in the case of the biblical prohibition of the Kohen Gadol marrying the Amana, it's got to be the Kohen Gadol is pushing her to do this, because from the woman's perspective, it's a really bad idea on all levels. It's a bad idea for her because her status will be forever changed. It's a bad idea for her kids, because her kids will be eternally impacted. No, eternally is a little bit strong, but will be impacted as well generationally, and therefore the penalty is on the husband. However, again, in the case of the rabbinically prohibited marriage, there's no real impact on anyone over here, and therefore the assumption is it's the woman who's encouraging it. Therefore, the penalty is levied at the woman. No ksuva, no benefits. So the Gemara says, Dover Acher Man Katanila, who is the author of this third opinion? So the Gemara says, Ika da'am Reb Shimon Elazar Katanila. It must be Reb Shimon Elazar. And I will say, remember, Reb Shimon Elazar was the first opinion who said that what? That any situation, Reb Shimon Elazar was the one who said, that any case where they both become psulim, so the rabbis went ahead and put the penalty on him because he's going to be the one who ultimately dissolves this marriage, so we give him another patch with the ksuva. In any case where ultimately neither of them are apostle, so then what? So then lemaisa, again, we put the penalty on her. So we assume over here that Reb Shimon Elazar is the author of this third opinion that says that ultimately if he initiates the marriage, then we go ahead and we penalize him. If she's the one who would initiate the marriage, we penalize her. The Gemara says, Uma tam kamar. And this third opinion is actually coming to shed light on the first one. Ma tam amruhu pasal vihi psula kansu osa ksuvasa. Why is it in the case where they both become psulim, like the case of the Kohen Gadol marries the Amana, why in that case does the husband still have to pay the ksuva? Mipnei shehu margila. Because the assumption is in a case like that, who is initiating the marriage? He is. He is, because he's the one who has really not all that much to lose. Because if he chooses to divorce her, he's right back where he was being the Kohen Gadol. And therefore the penalty is on him. Umatam hu kashavik shera kansu osa ksuvas ksuva. And why in the case where he is kasher and she is kasher, why is the penalty on her that she does not get the ksuva? The assumption is mipnei shehi margilaso. Because she is the one who initiates this marriage, and therefore again she is the one ultimately who pays the penalty. Ika da'amar, there are others who explain. Rebbe katanila. No, that maybe Rebbe is the author of that third, that davar acher. But also remember, Rebbe was of the opinion who said what? Rebbe was the opinion who said that the reason why it's more chamer in the biblical cases, that in biblical cases they don't need chizuk, right? In biblical cases, we assume that lemaisa, again, people observe the halacha. In the rabbinic cases, those need chizuk. So according to Rebbe, the Gemara says, Ikad amar Rebbe katani lo, v'chalutza kakashile. What about the case of chalutza? V'ha chalutza d'rab, bless you, v'ha chalutza d'rabanan v'islai ksuva. Because we're both saying, in the case of a chalutza, if a man marries a chalutza, man marries his chalutza, that is a rabbinic prohibition. Or a coin marries a chalutza, I should say, excuse me. That's a rabbinic prohibition, and yet what? We still say there is a ksuva. So the Gemara says, Hadar amar kevan de pasula midrabanan ze margila. So the Gemara says, zeu margila, because we assume that in the case of a rabbinic prohibition, zeu margila, vizohi margila so. Ultimately, again, in that case, he will encourage her. Ma'ika bein Rebbe, the Rebbe Shimon Alaza. So we'll say, what is the nafkamina between Rebbe and Rebbe Shimon Alaza? So we'll say, now what we've seen is the three opinions aren't really three opinions. They're really two major opinions. Rebbe Shimon Alaza, and Rebbe. So remember, again, Rebbe is the one who said that essentially biblical law doesn't need any additional stringencies because people treat it stringently as well. And therefore, again, in the case of biblical law, she'll get a ksuva. Rabbinic law needs additional stringencies, and therefore, in a case of rabbinically prohibited marriage, she will not get a ksuva. Rav Shimon Alaza was the one who said that what? That lemaisa, again, wherever they both become psulim, the assumption is he's going to terminate the marriage anyway, we give him an additional patch, he has to pay the ksuva. But where they're both ksherim, the only way that marriage is going to end is if what? Is if she terminates the marriage, and the best way to get her to terminate the marriage is how? Deprive her of any financial benefits. So what's the nafkamina between the two cases? Amrav chista mamzeres unasina li yisrael ika benayu. Oh, I'll tell you the nafkamina case. Let's say a mamzeres or an asina marries, or let's say a female mamzeres, a woman mamzer, female mamzer, marries a yisrael. Man do amr do oraisa. So the one who says that biblical cases, there's still a ksuva, hanami do oraisa. This is a biblical case, and therefore shaking she should get a ksuva. However, man do amne shehu margila, but in the case where it says that he pays the ksuva in any case where he entices her to marry, ha he margilolei. In this case, what would happen? I will say, if she's a mamzeres and he's a yisrael, so presumably who is convincing who to get married? She is convincing him, right? Why? Because for him, this is a very bad idea, right? For him, this is a very bad idea because the ma'isa, again, his children will be mamzerim, but for her, her children will be mamzerim regardless, and therefore, again, the ma'isa, she would be convincing him. If she's convincing him, then this would be a case where she would not get a ksuva. Ulu Rabbi Eliezer do Amer, Hare ze eved umamzer. Ha lo margilale, but the Bosei according to Rabbi Eliezer, who says that in a case where let's say a mamzeres marries an eved, so the child is both a mamzeres or a mamzer and an eved, ha lo margilale, she would not convince him for that because again, Rabbi Bosei, remember if you have a mamzeres who's marrying let's say an eved, so lemais again according to Rabbi Eliezer, that child is both an eved and a mamzer, which means that it's not in her interest to marry this man because at least if she marries another plain mamzer, so at least then in that case, then what? The kid's a mamzer, but at least not an eved. If she marries an eved, then the kid's a mamzer and an eved. So what happens in that case? So halo margalele velo midi, elo amrav Yosef machzir grusha mishenises ika b'nao. Rav Yosef, I'll tell you a good nafkamina case between Rabbi Shimon Alazar and Rabbi Shimon Alazar, Rabbi Lazar ben Shimon. And Rav Shimon Alazar. I'll tell you a good enough communicate between Rav Shimon Alazar and Rebbe. What's the case? Where a man remarries the woman he divorced after she married someone else. So what happens? So again, Reuven's married to Rachel. They get divorced. Rachel marries someone else, then gets divorced from that man. Now Reuven wants to remarry her. Now, I'll say that is, besides the fact that it's just a bad idea. Like the Torah also says that it's biblically prohibited. It's also Asr Midoraisa. So what happens? Man Do'amer Do'oraisa. So the one who says that in cases where there's biblical prohibition, you don't need additional stringencies, and therefore what? She'll get a ksuva. So Hanami Do'oraisa. This is the Do'oraisa case, and therefore again, she's still entitled to ksuva. Uman Do'amer Mipnei Shehu Margila. And the one who says that because that he entices her In this case, then what? Meaning that he enticed her, that's what she has to give her a ksuva. In this case, ha hi margula le. This would be a case, Rabbi Say, where what? She would have to entice him. Why would she have to entice him? Right? Because Rabbi Say, presumably, again, he's not going to be very willing to get into this marriage. At the end of the day, this is an isser for him. Rabbi Akiva, the Amar Yesh Mamzer, Mechayve Lavin, but according to Rabbi Akiva, who says that such a union would produce a Mamzer, because Rabbi Akiva says that Mamzerim even come from unions that are prohibited just by a Lav, Ha Lo Margulo Le, she would not go ahead and she would not try to convince him to enter into this union because she would not want to have a kid who is a Mamzer, Velomidi. I'll tell you the nafkamina case, the case of where a Kohen Gadol marries a Ba'ula. Remember, a Kohen Gadol is supposed to marry a Basula. In this case, he's marrying a woman who is not a Basula. This would be a nafkamina case. So the Ma'adamar who says that in any case of Da'araisa, she still gets a ksuva. Hanami Da'araisa. This is a case of Da'araisa. This is biblically prohibited. Umadar Meshahu Margila, and in the case where it says that he only pays Raksuva if he entices her to marry, in this case, Ha, he Margila Lay. In this case, Rabbi say what? She would be the one who is appeasing him to go ahead and get married. Ul Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, the Amar Yeshchala Mechavi Asay, Ha lo margalele, but Rabbi Say, according to Rabbi Nabosai, remember, when it comes to marrying a Basula, interestingly enough, if a Kohen Gadol marries a Basula, he has not violated a lav. He's only violated what? A positive commandment. Because the Torah. A Ba'ula, thank you. If he does not marry a Basula, but marries a Ba'ula, he has not violated a lav, he has violated an asay. So for him, for the Kohen Gadol, that might not be such a big deal. For her, it's not such a big deal. But however, again, according to Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, who says that you could create a chalal, even from the violation of an asay, ha lo margalalei, she will not entice him to marry her. Why? Because she doesn't want to become a chalala, and she does not want kids who are going to become chalalim. Ella amar of Ashi, machzir safek sotaso ika benayo. Oh, I'll tell you the case, the nafkamina case, where a man goes ahead and remarries safek sotaso. This is a woman, again, who is an alleged adulterer, but has not yet had that status confirmed. So I will say, remember, if a man goes ahead and suspects his wife of adultery and is ready to take her to undergo the sota process in the Beis HaMikdash, he is not permitted to go ahead and live with her. Machzir sotaso means the case of where he continues to live with her. So the Gemara says, again, don't kick off his lashon of machzir. Machzir sounds like he divorced her and then he remarries her. He didn't divorce her over here. He just separated from her and now he continues to live with her. So the Gemara says like this, so if you say that in any case where the marriage is biblically prohibited, this is still a case of biblical prohibition, and therefore what? There is still a ksuva obligation. And the one who says that because, again, it's he who entices her to engage in this marriage, in this case, he margila le. Rabbi say, in this case, the assumption is who is enticing who? She is enticing him. Because you also remember, again, she has nothing to lose by being in this marriage, so it's in her best interest to remain with her husband. I have according to Ramasya ben Charash, who says what? That if a man was taking his wife to the Beis HaMikdash for the Sota process, and then had relations with her, he has rendered her a Zona. Such a woman has the status of a Zona. Both side now. Again, remember, having the status of a Zona is pretty serious. Why? What does it mean? You can't marry any Kohen. So the Gemara says, ha lo margulale, she will not entice him to remain in this marriage. Velo midi, ela amar mar baravashi, sota vada igabena. Rather, again, mar baravashi says, the nafkamina case would be what? Would be a mamish sota case, right? Where a woman is a confirmed adulterer, that if you say it's an issue of being a daraisa, so lamaisa again, then what? Then she would still have a ksuva. But if it's an issue ultimately, again, of he margalale, that ultimately she would induce him, then lamaisa again, then that case, then again, Rashi points out, if you hold like Rabbi Akiva, who holds that there are mamzerim from chayvei lavin, then that would be a situation where she would not induce him, she would not try to entice him to remain married. So I'll say, what comes out from this sugya is we have a two-way machlokas, a fundamental machlokas. As here's what we know: we know based on the Mishnah that in a case of where a marriage is biblically prohibited, the woman still enjoys the financial rights of the marriage. But yet, when the marriage is rabbinically prohibited, she does not enjoy any financial rights of the marriage. Why is that? So we have machlokes between Reb Shimon Elazar and Rebbe. Reb Shimon Elazar essentially says, because in any case where they are both usser, the husband at some point in time will initiate the divorce because he is compromised as well. Because he will initiate the divorce, therefore what? We give him an additional penalty of having to pay the ksuva. But in a rabbinic case, where both of them are permitted, the only way to get them to force the hand to divorce is how? Deprive her of all financial benefits, and therefore she will file for divorce because she's getting absolutely no monetary support from this relationship. Rebbe, on the other hand, says that no, the idea is that biblical law is biblical law, stands on its own, and doesn't need any chumras. Doesn't need any chumras. Therefore, again, because technically speaking this marriage works, she's entitled to all the rights of marriage, and therefore she gets them. But rabbinic law always requires additional chizuk, and because rabbinic law requires additional chizuk, therefore what? We are more machmir in the case of shnios, and rabbinically prohibited marriage, and therefore deprive her of all financial rights. You can see that Allah Lamaisa, the Rambam paskins like Rebbe, and explains the distinction again as a da'oraisa dirabanan distinction, that in any case of a biblically prohibited marriage, because the severity of that union is already understood, there is no need to deprive the woman of all the financial rights. And in fact, it's considered to be an additional knas, an additional penalty for the husband for having entered into this marriage. But in rabbinic marriages, where people might be lax because it's not as severe, therefore there's greater teeth to this marriage. And in order to encourage women to divorce, in order to highlight the severity of even rabbinic law, the woman is deprived of all financial obligations. All right, so we'll stop over here. Pick up a mirror with the Mishnah tomorrow.